All right, open your Bibles to the book of John. We're still in John chapter 11 as we're studying about Lazarus being raised from the dead. And a lot of good truth there for us, things we can learn. No book like the Bible, God's supernatural book. Not only do you read the message clearly in the words, but you also have a message coming at you in type often, and often can speak to you and I personally, and answer deeper needs that we have. For instance, here you have the case where Jesus gets the message that Lazarus is dead, but he waits a while before he gets there. And in fact, it's 4 days. He's been in the grave 4 days before Jesus arrives. And both the sisters, Martha and Mary, bring that up. Lord, if you'd have been here, he would have not died. And yet it seemed like the Lord took his time after he got the message of getting there. It's a good example, and I say a side message. We get the main thing, but the Lord often makes us wait. And here's a pretty picture of prayer being answered, but delayed in the minds of the sisters. He does come. He does sympathize with them. He gets the job done. But sometimes we give up waiting when we ought to keep waiting and trusting. And then there's another thing. They were saying, if you could have got here while he was alive, you could have cured him of his sickness. But by delaying, the Lord gave him something better, didn't he? Sometimes God's answer comes later because it'll be better when it does come. And that's a little hard for us to get a hold of sometimes. He gives us more than we ask for. And often we forget to thank him for that. Charles Haddon Spurgeon is a very famous old-time preacher of the London days. And he was a Baptist preacher. His mother had been a Christian a long time and was praying for Charles Haddon Spurgeon, to get saved. He did get saved, made a Baptist preacher. She was a Methodist, the mother was. So she said, Charles, I prayed for God to save you, but I never thought he'd make a Baptist out of you. He said, Mama, that's just like our good Lord. He always gives us more than we ask for. And so that's kind of what the Lord did here on delaying, going to the graveside. But he does arrive. And then we talk to you a little bit about verses 24 through 27 there. If you look in chapter 11, Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Because Jesus had told her in verse 23, thy brother shall rise again. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. You know, he was telling her truth here. Not only that the resurrection at the end time, but that he was the resurrection himself. And there's a little fine point here. I'll ask you to go to a couple other scriptures. I think maybe I did this, but it'd be good for you to mark them. You have hidden in the statements here of the Lord something that's Paul later declares a mystery, the mystery of what we call today the rapture. The Jews believed in a resurrection. They believed in a resurrection of the dead. Jesus was teaching something different here. He was teaching there's a resurrection from the dead. This resurrection he's talking about will bring folks out, but not everybody. It will not be a general resurrection of all the dead. That will come later. But there will be a resurrection from one word. That's why I stick with the old King James. I don't like the new versions that change just one word, because there's a big difference. Go with me. You hold your place. We'll come back here. Go with me to Mark chapter 9. And I believe I want to look at about verse 10. 9 or 10. Mark chapter 9. And I'm looking in verse 10. And they kept that saying with themselves, questioning. I'm going to back up to verse 9. And as they came down from the mountain, he charged them that they could tell no man what things they had seen till. Till means till later. Till the Son of Man was risen, and here you got the word from the dead. Now, when Jesus rose, all the dead did not come forth. Some did, we remember the story, but he was raised from the dead. There's a time coming that his children, the believers, are going to be raised from the dead. So you pick it up then in verse 10 of Mark 9. They kept that saying with themselves, questioning one another. And here it is. They picked up on it, what the rising from the dead should mean. So that was they didn't quite understand, how could you rise from the dead? And then the same thing if you go over to the book of Acts. Go back to John and then move over to your right to the book of Acts. And we'll pick it up over there. In, I believe I want to look in Acts chapter 4, maybe about verse 2. If you move on over there, we'll find it. And so here's a truth kind of hidden in the statements as he was explaining to the sisters that he was the resurrection and the life. And in chapter 4 of Acts, verse 2, and they spake unto the people, the priests and the captains in the temple, of the temple, and the Sadducees came upon them, being grieved that they taught the people and preached through Jesus the resurrection, not of the dead, but from the dead. Now, when the rapture takes place, when the trumpet sounds, and the voice of the archangel of God, when this happens, if you're standing over in the cemetery, I don't know if God's going to make it visible. You know, we paint the picture. It looks good to see all the graves burst open. That may be. They rolled the stone away from the tomb of Jesus, not to let him out, but to show others he wasn't in there. And so I don't know that God might do that, but he could do it without us seeing it, and he could also make a demonstration out of it. But there'll be a resurrection from the dead, not of all the dead, but from the dead. The saved will be called out. The lost will yet remain. I'm talking about the physical body. And so here he's at the tomb of Lazarus now. He knows what he's going to do. He's purposely waited till he got there. He's teaching a lesson here, not only to the sisters, but there's a lot of Jews. There's a lot of the mourners around. There's family around. There's friends and neighbors around. They're all watching. And he comes not quite into the house yet, and Martha runs out to meet him. Mary stays at home, and then finally the message is sent back to Mary that Jesus has come, and then she runs out, and then all the family that's gathered in, all the friends and neighbors of the Jews that's gathered in, they follow Mary thinking she's going back out to the tomb to weep. They don't know Jesus is there yet. And picking it up with me then in verse 32, chapter 11. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her. Now watch the statement. He groaned in the spirit and was troubled. Now you got to remember, Jesus was God. He was incarnate in the flesh. This is a wonderful truth to us. The Lord is grieved at our feelings. He does hurt with us. And that's what you see here. He sees the pain of the sisters and the friends and the neighbors. And while there might have been some professional mourners, I doubt the girls had hired anybody, but I suspect it was friends and acquaintances and neighbors and kinfolk maybe. And they're all sad. We've been there. All of us have had a wedding, a funeral rather. Don't mix the two up sometime. And we've all groaned for somebody else, hadn't we? Well, I'm glad the Lord groans with us. I've seen some times where I've saw folks hurt so bad, and you hurt with them and you can't do much, but here's one that could do something and did do something. And so he groaned in the spirit and was troubled and said, Where have you laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. And then Jesus wept. Shortest verse in the English words. There is a shorter verse in 1 Thessalonians 5:16, I believe it is, but only if you read it in Greek. There's, I think there's 14 letters here in the Greek in John 11:35. And no, I got it wrong. I believe there's 16 letters here, and I believe there's 14 in 1 Thessalonians 5:16. I believe it says rejoice evermore. I have to look it up, but I believe it says rejoice evermore over there. And so here's the, in English, the shortest verse in the Bible. And yet, what it tells us, two words, tells us of the Lord's concern, compassion, and care, and his feelings. And he wept. We've all wept with somebody else. Something about tears, they attract tears, don't they? And even our one emotion passes on from human to human sometime. Do you ever see somebody laughing and you didn't know what they were laughing at, and the next thing you know, you were laughing with them? We've done that, haven't we? Now, when it comes to grieving, we generally know why they're grieving much more so, but to have sympathy with somebody else. And the Jews took note of this, the crowd around, verse 36, then said the Jews, behold how he loved him. Now, that love was apparent. And some of them said, could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind, have caused that even this man should not have died? And of course, that's what the sisters was thinking. Lord, if you'd have been here, they're not thinking that even now, even though one of the sisters said that even now he was going to be able to call him back. But they were saying, if you'd have been here, maybe you could have laid hands on him or said something or gave him something and kept him from dying. Verse 38, Jesus therefore again groaning in himself cometh to the grave. It was a cave and a stone lay upon it. I've been over there, and some of you have. We've seen that they used caves, and there are a lot of caves over there. They have caves over there, and they roll a stone over it. It was in a bigger area in the garden where Jesus was put in, and it was a rich man's tomb that had been especially worked on. For instance, if you go in the tomb where Jesus was there as close to Mount Calvary in the garden, and you go in, you'll see the little ledge that had to be man-made, had to be carved out. It was a natural cave, but they had worked on it. And they had worked on it to put the stone in front. Now, generally when we think of a stone covering the mouth of a cave, we think of a boulder being rolled against, and that was true many times. But a lot of the graves over there, including the one the Lord was put in because it was a rich man's tomb, it had some preparation done to it. And the stone that was rolled in front of the mouth, most of you know what a grinding wheel is. Well, just think of a big one, a big round one like a wheel. And that big stone, like a big grinding wheel, I don't know, some of you have been over there, was it 5 foot tall or 6 foot tall? I don't remember how tall it was, but it was quite tall. And it was placed in a trough, like a groove, a channel, so it could roll in that channel. But you just didn't walk up and roll it pretty easy. It would take some men to do that, to roll it. So that was the tomb of Jesus. Now you find other little ones like that around, and in some cases just a boulder, or even stone stacked against the mouth, close the entrance. I don't know what Lazarus was. It had a stone over it. It was pretty much probably the same thing as a picture of where the Lord himself was laid. It was the common way there of doing a grave. And so Jesus comes in verse 38, groaning himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. That would have been as natural as going over to our cemeteries and seeing how we do it today. Verse 39, Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Now, I talked to you a little bit about that. One reason the Lord might have waited 4 days is just to show the whole world that he was dead for sure. Because the Jews did have a little traditional thing that maybe sometime they had declared somebody dead and was not, they were not dead, and they came back. But they had this theory about 4 days that the spirit would hang around the body. And that was a false thing they had, but they had that. So by waiting 4 days, it removed all doubt that Lazarus was dead. And here the sisters were saying he stinks by now. And of course that would be corruption set in. And that would be the natural thing. So Martha tells him, Lord, he's been dead 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, said I not unto thee, going back to what he said, that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God. And they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I know that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. Now, see, he had a purpose and a plan all the time. You and I realize now the Lord knew one day we'd be studying this, one day it'd be recorded, and it's one of the miracles that has been passed on down through history, and the Bible has it right, and man still can't copy this. He can't duplicate this. You let a person die 4 days, they don't bring them back to life. Once in a while you hear some stories in the hospital where somebody went out during surgery for a while or something and come back, and maybe so, but not 4 days. 4 days seals this thing. He was dead. He was past anything that human beings could do to even dare to think about bringing Lazarus back. But the Lord said, I'm doing this. I know, Father, you hear me, but I'm praying now so the crowd can see this. Let me just make a sidetrack here, observation-wise. We believe in public prayer. We believe in praying in front of others where they can hear us. And we ought to be conscious, though, that is a testimony to others. But we also would have to face this truth. Most of us don't pray publicly quite like we pray privately, right? Not that there's anything wrong in the public prayers. We ought to do that. But that sure ought not be the only time you pray. We pray privately. We will tell the Lord things that we wouldn't say in front of the public, and rightfully so. It wouldn't be the best testimony for me to get up and tell you all the bad things I know on me. But I can tell them to the Lord, and he can keep a secret. You can't. And like the girl that gossiped a lot and somebody called her hand on it, she said, well, it's not my fault. I can keep a secret. It's my friends that can't. And there's a lot of truth to that. A lot of truth to that. No, we don't pray quite the same way, of course, and rightfully so. But public prayers have their place. Now, I don't like put-on prayers. I don't like somebody praying for show or praying to get attention in some way or another. I don't like that. And you've all heard that, haven't you? The prayer may be pretty to our ears, may not be too much to God's ears. Maybe it's pretty crude to our ears, and it may be pretty to God's ears. The biggest thing is try to be honest. That's right. Be honest with the Lord. Be honest with ourselves as best we can. I've been in some meetings, and I know you have, where somebody was called on to pray, oftentimes from the platform or over a microphone, and you couldn't help but think they prayed for show. And that's no good. That's not going any higher than the ceiling, because God sees through that stuff. Have you ever heard a preacher? Now, I'm going to pick on preachers now, because I are one. And have you ever heard a preacher that had a pulpit voice, but when you talked to him in private, it was a different voice? Now, I'm being a little bit mean, but if he can't be himself, I don't much want to hear him. If it's all a big put on, bless God, we're in the house of God, you children of God, I'm so glad you come. No, come on. Come on. Be honest. Be who you are. Don't give me all that hypocrisy stuff. And that's what the Pharisees were in the Bible, and that's what still some exist today. I've heard a few, and I know you have too. But here the Lord is being very, very real with them, and he told them, told God, I'm praying, not that I doubt you hear me, Father, but I'm doing it for the crowd. I'm doing it for the testimony here. That's what he's saying. And he says again, verse 42, I know that thou hearest me always. Boy, wouldn't it be wonderful? God really does hear us always, but he means answering always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now, I believe he used a loud voice, not that God needed or was hard of hearing, but he's letting the whole crowd hear what he said. I don't know how big the crowd was. There might have been 20 there. There might have been 100 there. Funerals drew a pretty big crowd in those days, and of course, still do. But he says, come forth. Now, we've heard all kind of surmising on it, and it's okay. Somebody said if he didn't call Lazarus by name and just hollered, come forth, all the dead would have come forth. That's just surmising. But he called Lazarus. And there's a type here. He knew his name. He knows our name. They're written in his book. He knows about us. Verse 44, and he that was dead came forth, bound head and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, loose him and let him go. Now, I can jokingly surmise some stuff here. To begin with, how'd he come forth? He was bound with the grave clothes. Now, you know what that was. That was wrappings. We've seen pictures of the old-time Egyptian mummies and so forth. Mummies and daddies were wrapped up, by the way. But anyway, we know they're wrapped up in grave clothes. Now, even had a napkin over his face. Now, if his hands was tied and his feet was tied, he couldn't walk, his face was covered, how'd he come out of the tomb? I wonder if his coming out didn't thin the crowd a little bit. You know what I'm saying? How'd he come out? The stone's been moved. He's laying down. He's wrapped up. They don't untie him because the Lord tells him later to loose him and let him go. How'd he get up? How'd he come out? I tell you, my own opinion is he just floated up and floated out. That's why it might have thinned the crowd some. I don't know. But it was, I'm sure it was a shocker to him. And so he comes out of the grave, and then the Lord has to tell him to loose him and let him go. And that means he's still tied when he comes out. His hands are tied, his feet's tied, he's wrapped up, he's got a napkin around his face, and he comes out this way. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. Well, that was the purpose Jesus had to start with. Let me say this. We sometimes think too small about what is going on. The Lord had so many crowds that he'd done so many miracles in front of. His teachings and everything. There was a bigger following of Jesus than you think by the time he was crucified. Now, a lot of them went back from his strong preaching. A lot of them followed him for nothing but the bread and the fishes. But there was a genuine crowd too. The Apostle Paul later referenced, talking about the resurrection of Jesus, the Apostle Paul later said that he was seen by at least 500 brethren at one time. That had pretty much been most of the bottom floor here filled with people. Now, when Jesus arose, he didn't appear back to the Roman world and the Gentiles that were lost, but he appeared to believers when he arose. You know, there's another type there. When he comes back for the saved, he appears to believers. And we're the ones going to hear the shout and the trumpet, and we're the ones going to be caught up, the believers. The world's going to have a real mystery to explain when the saved are caught out. And they already got some explanations floating around. They got extraterrestrial explanations. They got all kind already out there ready. The devil's always going to have an excuse to give them. But anyway, he floats out here. He comes out. He's loosed. And many believe. And you always got this word in the Bible. Boy, this is one of the biggest words in the Bible. And it's only three letters. B-U-T. Here you change the other side of the street. While many believed, but, opposite side of the street now, but some of them went their ways to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done. You always got the spies, the critics, the traitors. We still got them today, big time. And so they go to the Pharisees. Now, why the Pharisees? Well, the Pharisees was a ruling religious group. That's who they were. And so now they're telling what Jesus did. This is going to be a threat to the hierarchy and the power of the Pharisees. So they go tell on them. So they react, verse 47. Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council. Investigation now. We're sick of those, aren't we? A council and said, what do we, for this man doeth many miracles? How are we going to handle this? If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him. And the Romans shall come and take away both our place and our nation. Now, that was kind of a false threat. By the way, the Romans did that about 35, 40 years after the resurrection. They did come and do exactly that, but it wasn't because of Jesus. Jesus predicted they would, and that they would destroy the temple and not leave a stone unturned. And in AD 70, the Roman Emperor Titus came in and did exactly that, roughly close to 40 years after they crucified Christ. But I want you to notice, they have a council meeting. They've got a problem. How are we going to solve it? If you want to see how big this problem was, you jump over to chapter 12 and drop down to about verse 10. Over in John chapter 12, look at verse 10. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. See, Lazarus was a walking signboard for the testimony of Jesus. Here's the man that was dead for 4 days, and he's eating and drinking and talking and walking around and working, and man, how are you going to deny that? So now they're thinking about killing him too. It's amazing, isn't it? The conspiracy and the evil that the devil puts men up to. It is amazing. So not only do they want to kill Jesus, but they want to kill Lazarus. Sound like we're getting serenaded from somewhere. Is that coming from behind me? I know it's not heaven. It'll be prettier when it comes from there. Anyway, my time's up. I'll find out the mystery later. Give you the report here.